Margot St. James worked as a prostitute for several years in the 1960s. In the 70s, she started a prostitute rights movement and founded the group Coyote, an acronym for Call Off Your Old Tired Ethics. St. James now lives in France, where she makes a living in construction work and decorating, and also co-directs the International Committee for Prostitutes' Rights. My guests are Margot St. James and Gail Feederson, the co-founder, co-director of the Committee for Prostitutes' Rights. Feederson also co-organized the first and second World Whores Congress, held respectively in Amsterdam in 1985 and in Brussels in 1986. These congresses brought together women in the sex trades from around the world to speak on their own behalf and to organize. Feederson lives in the Netherlands, where she's an associate professor of psychology and women's studies at the University of Utrecht. Feederson is also the editor of the new book, A Vindication of the Rights of Whores. St. James wrote the introduction. I asked Margot St. James why she got involved in organizing prostitutes back in 1973.
Well, in 1962, I was arrested for prostitution in San Francisco, and I was not a prostitute. The vice cops had come into my home and solicited me and accused me and hauled me off to jail, and then I ended up in front of a judge who was somewhat misogynistic and a little out of time. I suppose he wasn't too hip. And he, when I said, "Your Honor, I've never turned a trick," and he said, "Anyone that speaks a language is obviously a professional." But after that, jobs were not available, non-prostitute jobs. Once you have a label, that's it. So then I worked for a few years. Then when the women's movement started happening, I wasn't working any longer, but I felt that it was important for the women's movement to include the prostitutes in the rights struggle. So that's why I founded Coyote in 73, to integrate the whores issue into the women's movement.
Can I just back up a second? What were the vice cops doing at your house?
Oh, they were pretending to be horny customers and offering me money to sleep with them. And I said, "Well, I've never taken money. I do it for nothing. You know, I like it." So I got myself into a lot of trouble. Huh. And I was just a farm girl in the big city and not suspicious.
Why are you continuing to work for International Prostitutes' Rights, considering that you retired quite a while ago from the profession?
Right. Well, I feel that it's a super important issue. Once I was stigmatized, it put me off the job market, out of the marriage market, and changed my life. But it also, I have a sort of a resilient character, and I turned it to my advantage, I think. I make more money talking about that than I ever did doing it. And plus I've met all kinds of wonderful people and traveled all over the world, which as a farm girl, I never would have gotten east of the Rockies had I not been arrested for prostitution.
Gail Feederson, am I correct in saying you've never been a prostitute?
No, I haven't. Not yet, anyway.
Well, you're a feminist academic teaching in the Netherlands. Why are you focusing on prostitutes' rights?
The issue of divisions between women has been central in my research and in my activism for many years, since the beginning of the second wave of the women's movement, 1970 or so. And I was working mostly on divisions between women of color and white women. And as a psychologist, I was doing many groups in which I brought Jewish women and Gentile women, lesbian women and heterosexual women, disabled women and able-bodied, many of the division, the different subgroups of women together. And it wasn't until a group of women working on prostitution in the third world came to me and said, "You know, we're working on prostitution all the time, but we don't know one prostitute, and we've never dealt with the women in our own country who are prostitutes." And so integrated in that Feminist Alliance project, we started a group. At first, it was a whore Madonna group, and since no one thought they knew any prostitutes, it was a group to look at the whore Madonna split within women, the split that we've internalized. And then, little by little, through contact with Margot St. James, we did make contact with prostitutes and started to build a movement around bridging the division between prostitutes and non-prostitutes.
It must be very difficult to organize women in an illegal profession.
Well, it is. The fear of stigma, the reality of stigma, and the reality of criminalization, the reality that if the police find out that you're a prostitute, You may not only have to pay fines, be arrested, you may lose custody of your children, you may lose your apartment. There are definite dangers in coming out as a prostitute. But I would say that the stigma is undoubtedly the biggest issue. And if at least within the women's movement and at least within academic and progressive circles there begins a growing respect for prostitutes, then at least there's some places where prostitutes can speak freely and safely.
Let me reintroduce you both. My guests are Gail Feederson and Margot St. James. They're both active in the International Prostitutes Rights Movement and authors of the new book, A Vindication of the Rights of Whores. Actually, Gail edited the book, and there's a preface by Margot St. James. Let's talk about what some of the issues are here and what you're organizing for. I think one of the priorities is that you would like to see prostitution decriminalized in countries around the world. Explain what you mean by decriminalization as opposed to legalization.
Well, legalization would mean similar to West Germany, that has a lot of regulation, and yet the workers, the prostitutes, do not really have all the rights that the other workers in the country have. They don't get unemployment, they don't get disability, even if they're injured on the job, and things like that. So they also have mandatory health checks, which the women find to be counterproductive, in that the clients don't want to use condoms, which in this day and age and with the spread of AIDS, I think men have to employ preservatives, they're called in France, condoms. And German women say that because they have a health card, that the clients say, well, these whores are safe, we don't have to take precautions. But I think it's about time that the men did take responsibility for the health of themselves and their families and use condoms.
Let me ask you, I think that prostitution is illegal in so many countries, such as in most states in the United States, because it's considered to violate the social and moral standards of the culture. I'd like to hear how you each defend prostitution.
Well, it's, the Dutch cop who came to our Congress in 85 in Amsterdam was the most honest cop I'd ever met. We were arguing against registration and licensing, and he said, we need registration for the social control of women. And that is exactly what illegal prostitution and licensing and the massage parlor licensing trip under a prohibition, all that is social control of women, all women, because it sets the prostitute apart, it keeps women divided, and it punishes those who ask for money.
Gail, do you want to add something?
Yes, I would also add that it's not a question of defending prostitution. It's, in the first place, defending the rights, the equal rights of women who are prostitutes, who exchange sex for money, defending their rights as one would defend the rights of any other citizen. Obviously, there's a commercial service here going on where there's an enormous demand. The number of clients is far, far greater than the number of prostitutes, obviously, because each prostitute has a full business of clients. Now, commercial sex is one form of sexual activity that's practiced in society. So we could talk on many levels, philosophically, sociologically, what one thinks of that. The fact is that that commercial exchange is a reality for many, many, many men, and that for many women, it happens to be the best paid or the only work they can find.
What about the argument, though, that prostitution degrades both the customer and the prostitute?
The degradation comes from the stigma, the harsh laws, the insult, the violence, the criminality. It comes from attitudes and from the hypocrisy, because obviously everyone knows that this is going on, and then the lives of prostitutes are made miserable, and the lives of the clients go on unaltered, and you know, there is no stigma on a client.
Margot St. James, you argued against legalization, but on behalf of decriminalization of prostitution. Have you been to brothels that are controlled by the state?
Yeah, well, I visited, but I haven't worked in them, no.
No, but from having visited, what were your... Maybe you would describe how one of them operates, either in Nevada or in another country, and tell us what you object to about that.
Well, some women like working in a brothel, and the brothel takes, takes half of the money or even two-thirds of the money. That's what I object to, is they take so much.
So in this case, it would be the state taking the money?
Well, usually they're not state-owned. They're state-regulated.
I see.
They're not state-owned.
Okay.
And they take the money, but they don't give any benefits in return. There's no pension. There's no protection. They don't pay for the health care. The women have to pay for their own health care.
Well, you can always organize to get better rights within.
Well, you can't organize. Yeah, right. You could. If it was legalized, it would be probably more simple to organize something. But these women are naturally slightly anarchistic. They're independent contractors, in a sense, and they perform this kind of service. It's a one-on-one service. They're not joiners. They're not easy to organize as a group.
A social advantage that many might see in legalizing prostitution is that it gets it off the streets. Many men feel really harassed by walking through certain neighborhoods and being propositioned by prostitutes wherever they go. And parents are very self-conscious walking in those neighborhoods with their children, who are going to point and try to get explanations for things that that the parents aren't going to be anxious to talk with them about.
Yeah, but most of the street prostitution is drug-related. Now, the visibility of prostitution is going to, you're going to have to address the drug scene and decriminalize drugs, I think, if you want to really have an impact on the visibility of prostitution, because most women would want to work off the street if they could. And the only ones you find on the street are the very young that can't get a legal job a job in a house because they're too young and the house owners worry. Or that they have a habit and they don't want to give up half the money because they want the money for the drugs.
Let's talk about some of the health issues involved with prostitution. I think obviously the worst problem to confront in the sex trades is AIDS. It seems that this would be a really awful time to be a prostitute. Do you think that any prostitute can feel safe now practicing her trade?
Well, many of them do have concern, but most prostitutes have used condoms for a long time. And also, the statistics don't bear out the fear that was rampant a few years ago, that all the clients were going to get something from the prostitutes.
Well, before we get to clients picking up things from prostitutes, let me just pursue the issue of prostitutes' health. You say prostitutes have used condoms for a long time. Mm-hmm. True, but men and women know how unreliable condoms can be. And when your life is at stake and, you know, it becomes a life and death issue. I mean, do you think prostitutes really trust condoms?
Well, they do. They buy the good kind. But the women who have contracted AIDS got it from their partners, not from the clients.
And so, yeah. It has been IV drug-using prostitutes who have been at risk. In the West, in the United States, in Canada, in West Europe, prostitutes have not been shown to be a risk group unless they have a risk factor such as IV drug use. Despite the fact that they haven't been shown by any of the research to be a risk group, there is a lot of concern, and there are certain countries in which it's not usual for the women to use condoms. In the United States, it is usual for women to use condoms in their working relationships. But then again, one sees the problem, because, for instance, for IV drug-using prostitutes, they're used to using condoms with their customers, but not in their personal relationships. And that's been the greatest route of transmission. But there is a great deal of concern. Some women have gotten out of prostitution. Others have changed their practices to safer sex practices.
There have been movements for mandatory AIDS testing of prostitutes in America and in other countries as well. Would you support or oppose that?
Oh, totally oppose that. And Nevada has a state law now that makes it mandatory for the client to use a condom, and I think that's a good law.
Mm-hmm. I should say that Nevada has legalized prostitution, is that right?
Yes, they have by county option, they have brothels.
Mm-hmm.
But they also have everything else in the cities where it's illegal, you know, like Vegas and Reno. But it's a state law that the brothels use condoms. So when it makes it easier for the prostitute when the client resists the use of condoms. They can say, no, it's the law.
It seems to me that there are different classes within prostitution, and by that I mean there are the more poor women who work the streets, and who, as you pointed out, are frequently drug users. Then there are the women who have better-paying clientele, who can work in more private circumstances and in more safe working conditions. Are your prostitutes' rights groups involved with education so that the women who are drug users and who are poor and working the streets get some knowledge about how to protect themselves and their customers?
Well, absolutely. Every class of prostitute is represented in the ICPR, and the project in San Francisco for AIDS prevention is a world model at this point. The World Health Organization has asked us to consult and forming programs around the world
so
to educate.
So what kind of programs are you doing?
Well, they're doing education on the street of prostitutes, giving out condoms also. They have many ways of getting the information out, flyers and radio and ads, but they had a little test, and everyone who took the test, then their name was in a raffle, and at the end of the month they would win $100 or 100 rubbers. So it was good. And Canada has, and Toronto has a very good, and Australia and Sydney has a very good program also. And several of the regulated countries have, the prostitutes' rights groups have mounted campaigns to educate the public on safer sex practices and use of condoms. And they have little signs on their windows, the women that work the windows in Amsterdam. We do it with, it says, so that this encourages the women to use condoms, to insist on their use, and that the clients, if the women are unified about all of them using condoms, and the clients can't keep going from window to window looking for someone who doesn't, then they have to start using them.
A curious side of the AIDS epidemic in terms of the prostitutes' rights movement is that perhaps for the first time in history, many prostitutes' rights groups are getting government subsidy because they know that in order to educate prostitutes, prostitutes have to do the educating. And in order to reach women who are on the streets, you are going to have women who have rapport with those who are on the streets. So there are groups in Australia, in Canada, in the United States, in Holland, in West Germany, in many countries who have significant funding now to hire educators, and they know, in fact, that these women are effective in educating men as well.
You both have met with women who are prostitutes in different countries around the world. I'd be interested to hear an example of what you think an enlightened country is and what you think is a model of the worst conditions. Is there a country that you think is handling this in such a way that, so that you can see them as an enlightened model, according to your perspective?
I've been living in Holland now for about 14 years, and we have chosen Holland as the coordinating base of the International Committee for Prostitutes' Rights because it's perhaps as close as one would come. I can't say model because there's many problems there, but in any case, there is an openness to listening to prostitutes, also in policymaking. Within the women's movement, there's been an enormous openness to integrating prostitutes' rights. Among health officials, there's a great deal of dialogue going on. Still a lot of stigma. There's still problems with the law. There's still all sorts of problems. But nonetheless, it was safe for us, for instance, to hold our first Whores Congress there and not to worry about who were the agents, who was going to get arrested, etc. Not from the Dutch, in any case. The foreign press that came in and the foreign people that arrived, we were more afraid of. So I would put Holland, in any case, as one of the better.
And the worst? France is not too... Well, the U.S. is the worst, actually.
What makes the U.S. the worst in your eyes?
They put them in jail. They, for long times, it's... mandatory sentencing in many, many states on the second offense or second conviction for soliciting, which is merely a crime of words. It's not actually taking the money. It's not actually having sex. It's just agreeing to do sex for money.
In countries where prostitution is illegal, do you think that paying customers should be penalized as well as the prostitutes?
Well, I'm against illegality. I'm against the state interfering in sexual exchange for any reason, and I think...
But if the state does interfere, do you think that both the prostitute and the customer should be...
I'm not a fascist, no. I think nobody should be interfered with by the state. The sex is a private business, and it should absolutely not have a penal code governing it. I'm not even sure that the health regulations should be enforced against prostitution.
Gail, you work on behalf of prostitutes' rights as a feminist issue, and I think that there are many feminists who think of prostitution as a trade that degrades women and a trade that women should be helped to get out of, and a profession that reinforces the status of women as sex object. Do you feel that it's been difficult for you to get many feminist groups to accept prostitutes' rights as a feminist issue?
Well, the process has been interesting because it's gone rather backwards. What we did was we started out working with prostitutes and organizing congresses for prostitutes, asking feminist non-prostitutes to help us with logistics in the congresses. So, for instance, interpretation, housing, food, all kinds of things that meant they needed to interact personally with the women, but we're not discussing theory and abstractly what does this mean for women. And in a way, it was a very radical thing, though we didn't realize it at first, to have women mingling and talking and making friendships and knowing one another and knowing that this woman is a prostitute and having breakfast with her and talking about her children and her life and, you know, taking away the mystification. In any case, in Holland, that's the way it went, before we started talking theoretically again about this as a feminist issue. And what we saw was that prostitutes are ordinary women, obviously, and prostitution is their work, and even that work has many things in common with sexual services that women are socialized to give in a lot of different ways. In certain countries, it was really clear, for instance, such as in countries in Africa, that sexual service can range from something very explicit, like a 10-minute prostitution encounter, to domestic arrangements with men in which having sex with him is one part of the arrangement, which he may or may not like, but it's a part of that contract. Now, this total situation of women is surely a domination of women by men, but you cannot single out prostitution and say, hey, that's the epitome, that's the symbol of all of our subjugation, and then stigmatize the women. We have to analyze it together.
As you've been organizing for international prostitutes' rights, within the feminist movement, there has been a group of women organizing against pornography mm-hmm. and against the sex trades. Mm. How has that movement affected your work?
Well, it sort of got very chilly here in the States for prostitutes' rights, and they started dropping us off the agenda for the women's conferences, the Women in the Law Conference, and so forth. They would put their own views out there, which is abolitionist. It's we want to stamp it out. We want to rescue all these poor women. It's all forced. It's all slavery, no matter what. And if you say you chose it and you like your work, you're sick. You know, who needs that kind of attitude? I think but that's not so strong in the countries in Europe we've been organizing it. I mean, there is abolitionism, but at least they have a dialogue going over there. They aren't so didactic and closed about opening up a dialogue with a prostitute.
Marco, I want to ask you why you decided to retire from prostitution. Like, when you did it and why?
Because I was 25 when I started it, and that was sort of the top age in this country for working. I mean, after you're 25, they expect you to go into management, and I didn't have those kind of interests. And so it was a diminishment of business and a demand that I find them younger women, and that sort of rubbed me the wrong way. So I dropped out. But in Europe, 25 is the age, average age in most countries where women enter the business. And they work for a longer period of time, let's say 10, 15 years. And sometimes I know women in their 50s that are still working. And there's not such a heavy double standard of aging over there. And the focus isn't on youth like it is in this culture.
So when did you retire? How long ago?
Oh, in the late 60s.
Gail, you're an associate professor at a university in the Netherlands. Are your colleagues accepting of the work that you're doing with International Prostitutes' Rights?
I think their feelings are ambivalent. They're accepting that I study prostitution, that I'm a researcher on it. But when they see that I do not disassociate myself from prostitute women and that I make comparisons, for instance, between professors and prostitutes as workers, then they may giggle and they may feel uncomfortable. And a number of my male colleagues in particular have started to talk to me in the hallway and tell me their secrets about prostitution. As if I've become one of the wise ones. So it's a bit double, and the credibility leans on the end of my so-called objectivity and detachment from the subject, but that's not the way I approach it, because I'm an activist as well as a theorist on it, and there's suspiciousness. They'll also ask me in a corner, why did you get involved with this subject?
Well, one really last quick thing. When a man confesses to you that he's had relationships with prostitutes, does that make you feel like, well, he'll really understand the work I'm doing now? Or do you think of him as, do you think any less of him because he's told you that?
I don't think of any less of him for being a client. I do think less of him if he'll only whisper it in my ear and will not stand up publicly for the rights of those women on whose he's dependent and whose services he uses.
Okay, I thank you both very much for talking with us.